من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله الذي لا يبلغ مدحته القائلون ولا يحصي نعماه العادون ولا يؤدي حقه المجتهدون الذي بعدا فلا يرى وقربا فشهد النجوى تبارك وتعالى والصلاة والسلام على سيد الأنبياء وخاتم المرسلين وشفيع المذنبين سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين الذين أذهب الله عنهم الرجس وطهرهم تطهيرا واللعنة الدائمة الباقية على أعدائهم ومنكر فضائلهم وغاصب حقوقهم من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله سبحانه وتعالى في كتابه الكريم: أقم الصلاة إن الصلاة تنهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر ولذكر الله أكبر. صلاة In our discussion last night, we have been trying to start with the early days of the Islamic history in order to follow the traces of the footsteps of the two parties who opposed one another right from day one of Islam. And we would like to follow those footsteps and reach up to the plains of Karbala in order to understand the historical background of the great confrontation which took place in Karbala between the divine forces on one hand, represented by Imam Hussein bin Ali alayhim salatu wa salam, against the shaitanic forces represented by Yazid bin Muawiyah. Last night I tried to cover the Meccan period of the life of Prophet from the time of Ba'sat to the Hijrat in very brief, as we have to cover about 70 years in these 10 days. Tonight we'll look at the first 5 years after the Hijrah. Very briefly, just touching upon some important events and identifying the people who were in the position of leadership on both sides. Of course, on the side of Islam, we know that Rasulullah was the leader, but we would like to know who were on the other side, and so we can be able to trace and follow them in the history of Islam until we see their emergence very openly within the disguise of Khilafat and Islam in the plains of Karbala, trying to sabotage the pristine teachings and values of Islam. The Kuffar of Mecca, the idol worshippers, were not satisfied with the Prophet having left them. Initially, historians would think that now that Muhammad has left Mecca, he is going to Medina, he has found a recipient society which is willing to listen to him, which is willing to change their way of life according to the Islamic teachings, they might leave him alone. But no, the people of Mecca were not satisfied with that. They decided to pursue the Prophet and to oppose the cause of Islam even after the Prophet left the city of Mecca. One of the very first things they did was the incident known as the Battle of Badr. I do not want to go into details. There was provocation in other ways. There were properties of the Muslims confiscated by the leaders of Kuffar. And the money was used in the trade caravan sent to Syria. Eventually, the two forces, the Kuffar of Mecca and the Muslims of Medina, faced one another in Badr. If you look at the map, Badr is very closer to Medina than to Mecca. It was not the Muslims who went to attack the Meccan people. It was the Meccans who came to fight against the Muslims. If you look at the sides, you will see on one hand you had the kuffar who came, 1,000 people, able-bodied people, very well equipped. On the other hand, you had 300 ill-equipped, and a large percentage of those people were old Muslims. The leadership of the kuffar was in the hand of two brothers, Atba bin Rabia and Shayba bin Rabia. Just to make you understand who they are, we'll come to the incidents. That in this battle where you see the kuffar coming there, outnumbering the Muslims many, many times, very well equipped, and Muslims were ill-equipped, and many of them were not even in that prime age of their life to be able to fight in the battlefield. In the very first individual encounter, which was the style of Arab battles during those days, three people came forward.
And this son of Atba known as Walid. These people are basically, Atba is the father of him. So he is basically the grandfather of Muawiyah and great-grandfather of Yazid. Shayba is the uncle of, being the brother of Atba, he is the uncle of Muawiyah. So in a way he is also great-grandfather at second degree of Yazid. And Walid basically is also what we call the Mamu. Walid is the uncle actually. Shayba is the brother of Muawiyah's Mama and grandfather. So these are the people who basically are the ancestors of Yazid bin Muawiyah. In the very first battle you see them representing the kuffar. The people who answered the challenge and eventually killed them, Hamza opposing Atba, you have Ubaidah opposing Shayba, and Ali bin Abi Talib came in front of Walid bin Atba. And all the three kuffar were killed. So you can see from day one, the representation of Islam in Kufr is very clear. It is the Banu Umayyah who took up the flag of Kufr and other worshipping and the values associated with it and the lifestyle associated with it. And it was the Prophet and his Ahlul Bayt, the Banu Hashim, who took up the flag of Islam and the values and the way of life attached to that flag of Islam. Salawat alaykum. The outcome was very interesting. Finally, when the battle started, there were 70 Meccans who lost their lives, 14 Muslims died, and 70 other kuffar were taken prisoners. And I'd like to briefly talk about the attitude of Islam and Muslims towards the prisoners of war in order to make our young children understand the superiority of teachings of Islam even compared to the modern day standards. This is the first battle. It is the first time in the history of Islam, 1400 years ago, that Muslims have 70 persons as prisoners of war. The tradition at that time was that if you catch somebody as prisoner of war, either you kill them or you make them into slaves. What did the Prophet do? Although the option of making them slaves was there, given by Islam, rather than killing them, as a lesser of two evils. But let us look at what the Prophet did with the first sets of POWs in the history of Islam. They were basically of three kinds. Some of them came from very rich families in Mecca. Some of them came from the poor families in Mecca. And some of them had certain talents in them. The Prophet said, those who are rich among you, you can only go free if your families pay the ransom for you. Those who are poor and do not even have any talent, they were left to go free later on without anything in return. But those who knew, who had the talent and ability to read and write, Rasulullah said, each one of you, if you sit down and teach 10 Muslim children how to read and write, you have your freedom, you can go back to Mecca. This is at a time when reading and writing, literacy in the Arabian society was such a rare commodity that historians actually give us the name of that period, names of the people of Mecca who knew how to read and write. You can't give the list of people who were literate if there were many, many. There were so few that historians have written down their names. In that time in the history of humanity, we don't have any example before Rasulullah where the enemies has been used for a good result in society to promote literacy and knowledge, because it's only by reading and writing that the gateway of knowledge will be opened to you. This is long before the modern world started talking about promoting literacy in the world. Before United Nations comes and declares literacy as one of the important targets it wants to achieve all over the world. And this is long, long before the Geneva Convention about how to treat the prisoners of war. Not only that they were let go free, the way they were treated, the way they were brought from the battlefield to Medina is very interesting. Even Western historians write that the prisoners, the Meccan prisoners, used to praise, and they used to say, you know, we are proud of this people of Medina. Although they had to walk back to Medina, but they made us ride on the camel. They gave us the dates which they had with them, and they themselves, you know, just ate the wheat bread. But the date, which was more important thing, and more delicious of the food, was given to the prisoners of war. And so we have this example. Now, whether Muslims live up to that standard or not during our time is a different matter. But nobody can come and say that Islam is a religion which promotes terrorism, which promotes barbaric attitude. Because if this is how you are expected to treat your prisoners of war, then just think what Islam wants you to do when you deal with one another and when you live in your family circles, in your community, at your workplace, or in the society at large. Salawat alaykum. The leadership of the Kuffar moved on. After the death of Aqaba and Shayba, it went on to Abu Sufyan, the grandfather of Yazid and father of Muawiyah. The next year they came to take revenge from the Muslims for their humiliating defeat. And again, they came 3,000 strong under the leadership of Abu Sufyan himself, whereas Muslims were only 700. The Muslims fought well according to the plan of the Prophet, but just because one group did not listen to his instructions, the victory which was already in their hand was lost. I do not want to go into detail, but this was the time in which we saw that the Muslims lost that battle by not listening to the instructions of the Prophet. The victory was taken from them, and one of the most tragic events is the martyrdom and shahadat of Hamza, the uncle of the Prophet, who was known as the Lion of the Prophet at the time. And he is actually the person who is known as Sayyid al-Shuhada until the tragedy of Karbala, where Hussein's shahadat superseded everyone's else's shahadat. Until the days of Karbala, the title of Sayyid al-Shuhada was reserved for Hamza, the uncle of the Prophet. And there also there is interesting connection with Yazid and Muawiyah. Hind, the grandmother of Yazid, the wife of Abu Sufyan, she actually had this personal vengeance, this feeling of hatred towards Hamza, because he was the one who killed her father in the previous battle. And she was the one who had bribed Wahshi, her own slave, to get the chance and kill Hamza. And when she was told about it, she comes, and this shows the level of animalistic attitude and nature of this family. She comes to the body of Hamza the Shaheed and orders Wahshi to open up his chest, and basically was trying to bite on the liver of Hazrat Hamza. It was such a tragic event that Prophet never forgot that incident. And from that day on he made the law that Muslims are not allowed to even mutilate the bodies of their enemies in the battlefield. This was the order given by the Prophet after he saw what had been done to the body of Hazrat Hamza. And this is an incident to which even Bibi Zainab referred when the family of Hussein was taken after Karbala to Sham. In her khutbah there is a sentence there. She says, "O Yazid, I don't expect any mercy from you, because you are a person who has grown by the blood of the woman who chewed on the liver of my ancestors. So your blood comes from that woman. And so I do not see any room for mercy, and compassion in you, and I don't expect any such thing from you. And that was actually a slap on the face of Yazid, because she actually lifted the veil from the face of Yazid by letting the people of Syria know that he comes from the family who were always, whenever the power was with them, against Muhammad, against Islam, against Quran, and against the Ahlul Bayt. Salawat. Finally, we come to the 50th. This time, it wasn't just the Kuffar of Makkah who came. Rather, it was what we might call in the modern historical term the allied forces, Ahzab, or the Battle of Khandaq. Ahzab is also a surah in the Quran, and Ahzab basically means groups from Hizb. And so it's the alliance of the Jewish people and the Quraysh. 20 Jews and 50 Quraysh sat down and conspired to fight against the Muslims of Medina. A huge army of 10,000 people under the command of Abu Sufyan was prepared, and they marched all the way to the city of Medina. And when the Prophet got the news, is basically on the advice of Salman Farsi, he accepted his advice, and basically the bridge was dug around their own encampment. And there also the interesting event is that the person who was able to save Islam was none other than the father of Imam Hussein, Ali bin Abi Talib, alayhi salatu wa salam. You know the stories in detail, but it's interesting. Even Tabari writes in that way, he says, when this famous warrior of the Kuffar, he jumped over one of the areas where the ditch was narrow, and he challenged the Muslims. And when the Prophet asked the people, nobody moved. كَعَنَّ عَلَى رُؤُوسِهِمْ أَطْطَيْرِ. These are the exact words of the historian. كَعَنَّ عَلَى رُؤُوسِهِمْ أَطْطَيْرِ. As if the birds were sitting on their heads. They didn't want to move and disturb the birds, so the birds would fly away. Nobody moved, said Ali bin Abi Talib. Second time, he challenged them. And he says, where is the Jannah which you have been promised? Because you have been told, if you kill, you get reward, and if you die, you go to Jannah. Come here, I would like to send you to your Jannah express directly. And nobody came forward. Everybody was afraid there. Again, Ali stood up. Only third time, the Prophet allowed him to go. And that was one of the most prestigious and honorable times for Amir al-Mu'mineen, where even the Prophet recommended and appreciated and recognized it by saying that today Ali is not just one person. He basically represents the entire Ummah and the entire Iman and Islam by himself, all alone, fighting against Amr ibn Abdul-Wud, who was the representation of Kufr in the Battle of Khandaq. Salawatullah. All this attitude of the Meccans, coming to war again and again, forming alliance with the Jews, coming to fight against Muslims in Medina, why was this? This was basically because Muhammad stood for changing the status quo of their social life, of their personal behavior, of their attitude in society, the way they treated one another. He wanted to basically change and reform the entire society, and that's why they did not tolerate it. And they fought to the best of their ability, and then finally the Prophet in this sixth year of the Hijrah goes towards Makkah with the intention of doing Umrah, and which ends in the peace treaty. And that is very important because the progress of Islam, the expansion of Islam, after the Sulah of Hudaybiyah, became much, much faster, and we'll inshallah talk about it till the wafat of the Prophet in tomorrow night's majlis, inshallah. Salawat. But till before the Sulah, till before the peace treaty in the sixth year after Hijrah, again, we see the people leading the forces of Kuffar, the forces of the Jahiliyyah were the ancestors of Yazid. And I do not look at this issue as a personal issue, rather I look at them and the entire family, the majority of them, as the representation of the satanic forces, whereas Muhammad and Hamza and Ali and the Ahlul Bayt and their loyal companion ancestors of Yazid And I do not look at this issue as a personal issue. Rather, I look at them and the entire family, the majority of them, as the representation of the satanic forces, whereas Muhammad and Hamza and Ali and the Ahlul Bayt and their loyal companions were there as embodiment of truth and justice and the divine forces and the divine values.